Let me tell you what the three things are that I think you should know about on this day. Riots among the ruins as the people of places like Spain and Italy take to the streets. Amazing pictures. They're rioting over Gaza, a million of them. Bibi Netanyahu admits he wants to control the media. He says, control the media. And he's very specific about it. That's the very thing I was fired for saying when I worked at CNN. And Americans are growing more and more tired of being taken advantage of and are now fighting back. How much are sentiments really changing in America? I'm going to take you through it blow by blow, and we're going to give it the Sanchez effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. And the Israel blowback is alive and well, and it's happening in different parts of the world. First, take a look at these images. These particular ones are coming out of Spain and Italy. Watch. This is crazy. Look at that. Chaos erupting in Rome with a million people taking to the streets, demanding justice for Palestinians. They're condemning Israel's actions over the weekend to seize the flotilla. What began as a peaceful march has now spiraled into violent clashes between protesters and the police. And they're chanting Free Palestine and Stop the Genocide. They've apparently filled Rome's historic avenues with deafening calls for Gaza. Several hundred protesters have battled with the police in different times and different places, and they've responded, the police have, with tear gas, and they're shooting water cannons at them. Protesters fought back by setting cars off fire and burning garbage bins. And it's crazy to watch some of these videos as they've been coming in, turning parts of the city really into a war zone. They hate the fact that their prime minister in Italy, for example, has done what she's done. So in Italy and other parts of Europe, they are protesting and they are rioting. But in the United States, I want to talk about this. In the United States, it's a quieter, more impactful, though, reaction that is taking place. It's more of almost like a heartfelt change that's taking place in my country. Americans have always felt somewhat taken advantage of. But now, it's worse than ever. They're like the neighbor who lives next to people who always come and borrow your stuff, but they never return it. And they always ask for money, and they never pay you back. And yet they're always criticizing you for everything you do, telling you how to raise your kids, criticizing your wife or your husband. And after a while, you just get sick of this. You get tired of being treated that way. That's how Americans are feeling right now. That's how Americans are feeling about, well, I can name two specific countries.
Israel is a strategic albatross around their neck. The policies that Israel pursues in the Middle East are not in our interest.
The Zionists from the beginning have wanted a greater Israel.
And need I remind everyone here that we're $37 trillion in debt. $37 trillion. We should not have to be sending more American tax dollars over to defend Ukraine.
Israel, Ukraine, Israel. We're hearing a lot of that these days in America. They're kind of tired of it. So let me try to explain to you why Americans are tired of this, okay? I'm going to take you through this. It's pretty simple. If you live in America, you get no guaranteed or universal health care. You get no health care at all. If an American wants to go to the doctor, they have to pay for it themselves. Richest country in the world. Richest country in the history of the world. And you get no help with health care until you turn 65. Israel? Free health care for all citizens from cradle to grave. Ukraine? The same. Free health care for every single citizen who needs medical care. The government pays for it and guarantees it. You get the picture? I'm not done. Let's talk about holiday pay or PTO or whatever you call it where you are, right? American workers get zero, nothing. Not even a single day is guaranteed for compensated time off by the government. If your employer wants to give it to you, it's up to him. If not, tough ruck. Israelis, meanwhile, they're guaranteed 2 weeks by law, and they get full pay for all national holidays, and there's a lot of them. Ukrainians, they've got an even better deal. They're guaranteed 24 days off a year, and they can carry them over into the next year. Imagine that. So they can have nice, long vacations with their families. Americans don't get that. What am I missing? Maternity. Maternity leave. In the United States, if you get pregnant, you're guaranteed how much time off? 0 Nothing. Not a single day. Not one day. If your boss wants to be nice and give you some time paid off so you can spend some time with your baby, great. If she doesn't want to do that, tough. Nothing you can do about it. Women in Israel, 15 weeks of paid leave. Women in Ukraine, 18 weeks of full pay so that they can bond with their child. Sounds nice. Sounds right. Sounds good. Who really pays for Ukrainians and Israelis to join and enjoy that luxury, by the way? Well, if you're an American taxpayer, you. The answer is you. Yes. The guy or the gal who doesn't get paid leave, who doesn't get maternity leave, who doesn't get health care, you are paying for the health care, the paid leave, the holiday pay, the maternity leave for the people who live in Ukraine and the people who live in Israel. That's nice of you, by the way. Israel has only 9 million people. It's a tiny, tiny little country. They've already gotten $30 billion from you just in the last year and a half so they can keep guaranteeing their citizens the social services you, as an American, don't get. Ukraine has 37 million people. They've got about $300 billion or more from you in the last 3 years. Again, you know, money they don't have to come up with so they can continue to pay for the social services that Americans don't get. That is why Americans have this light bulb going off in their head, and it's making them mad. Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, and many others are starting to say things like this.
And I was watching the Republican debates, and they're sitting here trying to make me cry for people in Ukraine. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Have you looked around America yet? Do you really think that this is what the people at home are going to respond to?
Half my family is Ukrainian from my grandparents. And so, you know, personally, I think we should help. But I don't have a studied answer for you.
Have you, how much money have you sent to Ukraine?
None.
Oh, so what do you mean by we? You're the one whose family's from Ukraine. Like, why don't you send them $1 billion?
Because I'm trying to fix health care.
Why don't you fix their health care if you're, like, so deep? If you think we need to help, why don't you start? How about you first? Yeah. I notice that's never, like, even an option for anybody. It's like, we need to help. That's not what charity is. Forcing other people to help is not charity.
Here's
it's
the good
vanity.
News.
You want to know something? I'm not very interested in funding an economy that's based on killing people, especially innocent people and children. I don't understand it, Anna, because I serve in the United States House of Representatives, and I believe my job title as a representative is for my district, which is the American people.
You're hearing that a lot in America these days. And by the way, what they're saying is the truth. So is Israel grateful or even sensitive to America's sacrifice? No, no. In fact, they get mad when they hear these people complain. If anything, they almost sound entitled. I want you to listen to something. This is Bibi Netanyahu basically calling the people you just heard, calling Tucker and Candace and Congresswoman Marjorie Stoneman Greene, Nazis. He's calling them Nazis for what they said.
We talked about the woke right, and he said, I call it the woke Reich. That's a brilliant observation. The woke Reich, because these people, you know, they're not any different from the woke left. I mean, they're insane. They're loonies. But they're actually meeting on some of the things. We have to fight back. How do we fight back? Our influencers. I think you should also talk to them if you have a chance, to that that community. They're very important. Mm. And secondly, we're going to have to use the tools of battle. And the most important ones are the social media. And the most important purchase that is going on right now is class.
Followers.
TikTok. TikTok. Number one. Number one. And I hope it goes through because it's it can be consequential. And the other one, what's the other one that's most important?
X.
X.
He's talking about owning the media. Owning the media. Do you know how many people, including me, have been fired for suggesting that Israel in the past has wanted to buy or own the media? He's admitting to it. Think about what you just heard there. I mean, that's the leader of a foreign nation attacking American citizens, calling American citizens Nazis. Tucker Carlson, he says he's a Nazi, right? That's what he said. Bragging about taking over the media outlets to control how you think if you're American. I mean, he's saying this stuff out loud. And by the way, where's the criticism? Foreign leader criticizing Americans. Where's the criticism from CNN? Where's the criticism from Fox News? Where's the criticism from the big bad New York Times? Could you imagine if President Putin had said that? Could you imagine if President Putin had said that? By the way, just for the record, President Putin has never asked for or taken a single penny from U.S. taxpayers. These guys take billions, hundreds of billions, and they're calling Americans Nazis. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, here's another one. Talk about entitled. Remember this guy?
You've allowed yourself to be in a very bad position, and he happens to be right about it.
From the very beginning of the war,
you're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having
cards.
Right now, you don't. You're playing cards. You're playing cards. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country. That's backed you far more than a lot of people said they should have.
Have you said thank you once this entire meeting? No, in this entire meeting, have you said thank you? You went to Pennsylvania and campaigned for the opposition in October. Offer some words of appreciation for the United States of America and the president who's trying to save your country.
I'm not paying cards. Not paying cards. I don't even know what he's saying. By the way, Zelensky canceled elections in his country. Think about this. Which means that guy arguing with the president of the United States in the White House is presently, and not even then, not a democratically elected leader. Not. And his government is universally also considered one of the most, if not the most, corrupt country in the entire world. And to be fair to Mr. Zelensky, because I want to be accurate about this, corruption did not begin with Zelensky in Ukraine. Corruption has been a part of Ukraine since the 1990s and continues to this very day. And here's the irony. The leader of a corrupt country that is about one-tenth the size of the United States is demanding that President Trump support his demanding. And he gets carte blanche, by the way, to enter into the White House and to walk into Congress whenever he wants so he can ask for more and more and more of the people's money. With Israel, it's probably even worse. It's kind of weird, but here's Tucker Carlson explaining what the IDF did in the Pentagon recently. Listen to this.
There are a bunch of Israeli Defense Force officers in the Pentagon that week. And during that week, ask anyone who works at the Pentagon, they enraged American Pentagon staff by just barging into meetings, giving orders, making demands, and nobody did anything about it. How can a foreign military officer barge into military headquarters, even if invited, but barge into a meeting and start demanding, we want this, we want that, you need to get on this? Huh?
Think about that. I mean, when the U.S. president wants to address Congress, he must get approval from the Speaker and the leader of the Senate. When the president of Israel wants to address Congress, he simply picks up the phone and says, I'm coming. And they say, yes, sir. Aye, aye, sir. And now we're learning that the military of Israel, the IDF, is running roughshod over U.S. military officials at the Pentagon during a war? Who's running who? Why are Americans allowing this? Well, that's the point. More and more Americans are saying, stop. No, we're not going to take this crap anymore. There is a group of Americans who have been trained to believe, though, that somehow the people of Israel are actually entitled to have more, that they're better than us. So we have to give them more if we're Americans. In fact, all the people of the world have to give them more because they are entitled to this. They're bigger, more important. So says God. Here's Tucker's take on that.
And the last thing that I think we need to do to restore balance between the relationship between the United States and Israel and to restore some sanity to the public conversation on this topic is to get our theology right. And this is not a message aimed at Israelis or Jews. This is a message aimed at Christians, who are the largest group of Israel supporters in the United States. And their view of Israel is colored not just by sentimental attachment, which is fine, or trips to Israel, great, no problem, but by a Christian heresy, the oldest of the Christian heresies, which is that God somehow prefers some people based on their DNA. And of course, the whole point of Christianity is that that is no longer true, that there is no chosen people. The chosen people are people who choose Jesus. That is the Christian message right there. It's not an anti-Semitic message, by the way.
So is the IDF in charge of the United States? Or are they in charge of Israel? Are they in charge of the U.S. military? You know, Professor Jeffrey Sachs recently explained publicly that the U.S. and subsequent wars and attacks in Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria and Libya, all of these wars the United States fought in all of these countries were at the behest of Israel. We were simply taking orders. Israel was saying, go, war with them, go, war with them, go, now them, go. I mean, but this takes it to yet another level. They're now in the Pentagon, running the U.S. military during a war? That's what Tucker just explained. Man, it's crazy. Let me bring somebody in to talk about this who has spent a lot of time talking about this on his own podcast. It's called, appropriately, Reason to Resist, kind of what the people are doing all over the world in their own way, people in the United States, certain people in Italy and Spain, as we showed you just a little while ago. His name is Dimitri Lascaris. He is a Canadian. He is a journalist. He is a politician. Damn good lawyer, they say. Dimitri, thanks so much for joining us, my friend.
It's a great pleasure to be with you, Rick, and I much enjoyed your excellent presentation.
You're kind to say that. What do you make of this peace plan that I suppose we have to start with because we're being told that we're this close to having this thing come to an end? Personally, I don't buy it because I'm being told it's run completely by the president and the prime minister.
Well, it was presented as a peace plan, but if you read the fine print and you listen to the threats that were accompanying the plan, it was an ultimatum. And there's no question, Rick, that key elements of that ultimatum were bound to be unacceptable to the Palestinian resistance. Amongst others, they will not tolerate foreign troops on the soil of Gaza. They demand a complete withdrawal of Israeli troops, a guarantee of an end to the war. None of that was in the ultimatum. These characters, Trump and Netanyahu, decided they had the authority to appoint Trump as the chairman of the peace board and the war criminal Tony Blair as his, deputy on the board. Mm-hmm. And the Palestinians have said very clearly, we're not going to put up with foreign management of Gaza. And in fact, after this ultimatum was issued, the statements that came from Hamas were unequivocal in this respect. They will not tolerate foreign governance of Gaza. They will not tolerate foreign troops. They are not going to disarm until a Palestinian state is created. They said, we will give our weapons over to the Palestinian state, mm-hmm. which will then use to defend the Palestinian people. But we're not giving them up until then. So we are far apart from a deal, Rick. We're not even on the one-yard line.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just a land grab. And it sounds to me like Hamas is basically saying in this case, no, you don't get to just take the land over and give it to other rich people so that they can run it like the Riviera and put up brothels and hotels and whatever the hell they want to do. And the fact that the president's son-in-law is going to be in charge along with Tony Blair, just, if nothing else, looks just crappy.
Yeah, they apparently imagine that the Palestinian people are going to be waiters in the Donald Trump Gaza casino or something like that. I mean, these people, Kushner, we are supposed to believe that Kushner has the interests of the Palestinian people at heart. This would sell them out in a heartbeat. He'd sell out his own grandmother for a buck. So I don't think this stands any chance of passage in its current form. But what is really quite interesting, Rick, is that notwithstanding the fact that Hamas said quite clearly, there are elements of this we can accept, but there are elements we simply will not live with. Trump came out and said to Netanyahu, you must stop bombing Gaza because we're close to a deal. And Axios reported that he actually like snapped at Netanyahu in a call they had recently because Netanyahu was saying there's no deal to be done here. So I think what's happening is that Trump is feeling a lot of pressure from the American people, as you so ably explained, to bring this horror to an end and stop shoveling hard-earned American money down the Netanyahu toilet.
But here's the question. When Trump positions that, right, that you just said, is he saying that because he really means it, or is he saying it because he sees what Rick Sanchez just reported and says, I'm losing part of MAGA, I'm losing the right, my polls are somewhere, I just checked before I started this interview with you, his approval ratings are somewhere between 40 and 43%. If my approval ratings were that low, you know what I would do? I would pretend to be hard on Bibi Netanyahu, even if I'm really not. Do you get my drift?
100%. There's no question that might be going on here. And I think the real question, we're going to find out in the days ahead whether this is all just kabuki theater. And it's all just Donald Trump trying to calm down his base. But there will come a point in time, we may not be there yet, where the disparity between the public opinion of Americans and U.S. government support for Israel is so great that it's simply not sustainable. And I want to highlight one poll in particular that just came out. Mm-hmm. It was published by the Washington Post, and it showed remarkably that 61% of American Jews, members of the Jewish communities, now say Israel has committed war crimes in Gaza, mm-hmm. and 4 in 10 say the country is guilty of genocide. And amongst Jews in the United States who are 18 to 34, 50% say Israel is committing genocide. So if Israel loses the American Jewish community, I would imagine that the Christian evangelicals are not far behind, and Donald Trump is going to be in a world of hurt. Whether he's at that point yet, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, obviously, you and I both have lots of friends in the United States who are Jewish, and they're wonderful, wonderful, great people. And the vast majority of them have been wondering for some time about Bibi Netanyahu for corruption and political reasons. And now he basically is seeing that he's putting their Jewishness, not to mention their Israeliness, for those who still have ties to Israel, which most of them are taught to have ties with Israel from the time that they're very young, they're now questioning that relationship with Israel. And they're even questioning their own Jewishness in terms of how they're being treated by the rest of the world.
Yeah, the state of Israel is dragging the name of the Jewish people through the mud, claiming to be committing these monstrosities on their behalf. I mean, it's an absolute obscenity, and I see every day Jewish people in our midst becoming more and more irate about this smear. It's effectively anti-Semitic to say that this genocidal state is the Jewish state. It is not the Jewish state. And by the way, as someone who was raised in a Greek Orthodox Christian family, I am, although I myself am not a practicing Christian today, mm-hmm. I am offended and extreme at the idea that support for Israel is consistent with the core values of Christianity. It is an affront to the core values of Christianity. Anybody with a conscience and just a passing familiarity with the New Testament should understand that.
You got to be really good, though. I mean, you got to hand it to whoever it is inside Israel who conceived of this plan, where A, they would make no one in America be able to criticize Israel, and people like Rick Sanchez working at CNN would be fired for even intimating any such thing, and then going and essentially owning, well, buying influencing certain parts of the Christian, I guess, evangelical movement in the United States so that they can literally get them to have Congress and create a big voting force so they can get people elected as well. I mean, the whole thing is kind of brilliant if you think about it, but it's coming apart now.
Man, it's amazing it's lasted this long, because there's been plenty of evidence of Israeli war crimes and crimes against humanity for decades. You know, back in 2018, I think it was, Western human rights groups like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, Israeli human rights groups, documented that Israel was committing apartheid, which is the second worst crime against humanity before the crime of crimes, genocide. And despite that fact, you know, support for Israel in the West remained at fairly lofty levels. So I think that is really a testimony to the strength of this propaganda system. But, you know, 2 years of a live stream genocide conducted with the utmost audacity, the brazenness of it just boggles the mind. Even that, that extraordinarily powerful propaganda system cannot sustain those blows. It's crumbling before our very eyes. I don't think the reputation of Israel can ever recover short of a dramatic transformation and the government of that country and its attitude towards the Palestinian people.
You know, it's funny. I'm struck by what you just said about how they've been able to pull it off and keep it going for so long. But I know personally how they've been able to keep it going for so long, and I'll share it with you. I'm sure you've probably read, because if you look at the Wikipedia entry on Rick Sanchez, which is, by the way, Wikipedia is the most corrupt, by far the most corrupt way to look for any information on anybody. Mine is nothing but bad stuff. Everything that ever happened, I stole candy when I was five from a girl next door, and I think that's in there too. But anyway, you'll find out that essentially anybody in the United States who questions anything about Israel is called an anti-Semite and loses their job. That's the way it's been only until the last maybe 7-8 months has that changed in America, where you now have people like my friend Cenk Uygur, who is a dear friend of mine. I know he's Turkish and you're Greek, so, I mean, you know, maybe you guys don't get along. But
Cenk is a great guy.
He is a great guy. And he just came out, and he's been doing this a lot, and so have others, saying, go ahead, call me an anti-Semite. Go ahead. You know what? It doesn't work anymore. And you know what? I think he's right. I don't think that's going to fly anymore in the United States. Maybe never again.
I think people are now rolling their eyes when they hear this hurled at people, you know, who condemn Israel's heinous crimes. You know, they've beaten that horse to death, Rick. I don't see any evidence that is even, not only is it not influencing the people who hear it, it's not deterring the people at whom it is directed. Mm-hmm. And the most obvious and I think impressive examples of that are Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens,
yeah,
and Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, these people have been vilified. You yourself quoted some of the horrible language that Netanyahu directed at them.
Call them Nazis.
Exactly. I mean, could you possibly say something worse about these stalwarts of the, you know, the Republican base? And they are not even slightly deterred by any of this. Candace Owens is basically, I've watched several episodes where she says, you know, bring it on. I'm ready. I'll take you all on. And, you know, this is a fight to the death. And I'm going to get to the bottom of who killed Charlie Kirk. And I'm going to continue to say the actual words that she used is, if you support Israel today, you are filth. Those are pretty strong words.
But let's talk about the other side now. I want to show you something. I want you to watch something, and I'm going to get your reaction to this. Dimitri, this is going to be so cool. You know why? Because just like we just took our viewers through all of these new cool people who are truth tellers, who I admire, by the way. I admire Candace Owens. I admire Tucker Carlson. I know them both. And Judge Napolitano and Mearsheimer and Jeffrey Sachs and so many others that I can't name off the top of my head right now. But there's a whole lot of people involved in this truth-telling that's going on in America, and thank God it's waking up. But you know who's not waking up, and you know who's still shilling for them, and you know who's still carrying their water? The CNNs and the New York Times and the Fox Newses and all the members of the corporate media. And there may, oh, and Bill Maher. HBO, et cetera, et cetera. And there may be no better example of that than an episode of Bill Maher's show recently on HBO, where this guy said this.
This is not about critical race theory on college campuses. This is about Iran. Iran and Qatar have come up with a disinformation campaign that they are running through TikTok and Instagram that is massive. If you are a young person, you open up your phone and all you see is dead Gaza baby, dead Gaza baby, dead Gaza baby,
right.
Diddy, dead Gaza baby, dead Gaza baby. That's basically your whole feed.
I mean, I don't know, man. I'm just gonna let you react to that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these three characters, these anti-Muslim hate artists sitting there nodding their heads in agreement with each other, and nobody cites a single piece of evidence, Rick, to back up what they just said. Not an iota. Where's the proof?
Yeah.
What, do you take us for fools? Look, man, I've been advocating for the Palestinian people for more than a decade. I've never been given a dime of money by any government for any of the positions that I've taken. In fact, I don't even make a living from journalism. I do it. I'm primarily a lawyer. I do this because I'm committed to it as a matter of principle. And I know many people like that. There's just no evidence whatsoever that there's any foreign money funding this. And the idea that Palestinian babies, photographs of them blown apart, burned alive, amputated without anesthetic, that this is somehow a theater production funded by autocracies that are aligned with the United States government is ludicrous. Ludicrous.
How about the fact that he turned them into a joke? People in the audience were laughing when he said dead babies. That's what happened. I mean, how does that even happen? Who are these people? They're monsters. Bill Maher has turned into just a horrible, horrible human being. And I thought, I'm sure you agree with me. I used to like watching his show. I thought he was relatively interesting, curious, and smart. I think he's turned into a nasty old angry man and an idiot.
I was exactly the same way, Rick. I used to watch Bill Maher and I used to find him entertaining. And then I started hearing this pro-Israel crap come out of his mouth, and he's unwatchable now. And you know what happened to you, Rick? It's a badge of honor. It's a badge of honor. The fact that the corporate media came after you in the way it did showed that you were a truth teller. Anybody who's a truth teller and tries to get a job or maintain a position within the corporate media is doomed. If you're in there and you're being highly paid, it's because you're a liar.
Yeah, unfortunately. And that, you know, look, Roger Ailes, he and I became friendly over the years, and he used to call me when he was running Fox News, and he wanted to hire me. And I remember I would oftentimes say very negative things about Fox News because I worked at CNN, and, you know, I was kind of goaded into it. And sometimes they deserved it, right? But I remember Roger used to say to me, he said, I will never hold against anyone their right to be able to pay their bills and feed their family. So I'll say the same thing. You know, I'll take the high road. Those people like Anderson Cooper and, you know, the Hannitys and all these people who work at these corporate networks and the people who work at the New York Times, I get it. You know, I get it. You know, they got a mortgage to pay and they got a wife and they got children, or they got a husband and they have children and, you know, they've got things they got to do. And a lot of times in America, that's kind of what happens. You know, they're not going to get a job making $10 million somewhere else, right? So it's what it is. They're owned, just like Congress is owned.
Look, I agree with you up to a point, but the problem that I have with people like Anderson Cooper, you know, Bill Maher and so forth, is that these people, I doubt that they have a mortgage they can't afford at this stage of their careers. They've probably accumulated so much wealth that they're in the top 1%, 0.1% of Americans. So at some point, if you're just sort of struggling to get by and you're looking for a way to pay your family, I understand. I don't think I could do it myself, but I understand the need for employment, for gainful employment. But when you're richer than God, you know, I mean, how much money is enough, man? They don't have enough money to start telling the truth.
I wonder, too, if it's just about going against the flow. You know, like this show, as I'm sure you can tell, was conceived by me, written by me, and everything that you and I are talking about are your ideas and my ideas. I don't have a team of 40 writers who are putting my scripts together or building my show. And I think in some respect, I used to fill in for Anderson. So whenever Anderson was sick, they'd call me and they'd say, hey, you gotta go be Anderson tonight. And I remember one of the things that struck me about doing Anderson's show was that I didn't have to do anything. It's like 30, 40 people writing the show and they prepare all this material. So everything kind of feeds into this thinking. So to bucket, you got to come in and say, no, 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 no. Today, I want to come in and not say this. I want to say that maybe Ukraine is not winning the war. Maybe, in fact, I've been reading some articles and I learned that Ukraine is actually losing this war. And I want to say that. Well, he ain't going to do that. You know, he's just not going to go in there and change the narrative. The narrative, like, continues. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And by the way, the media landscape has changed, and you've seen people like Tucker Carlson go it on their own.
Yes.
And Candace Owens, and they still have a huge following. Mm-hmm. I had no idea how much money they're making, but I suspect.
Bigger.
I suspect making a good living. Absolutely.
You're right. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I get excited thinking about this. I'm pulling for him. I've been looking at Candace's numbers, and I read them because I have a podcast of my own, and so do you. But I've been looking at the numbers recently. Look. I used to get congratulated and get a bonus at CNN because at the time I had some of the highest ratings at CNN with my show Rick's List, which a lot of folks remember because I was the first guy to start using Twitter on the air and all that crap. But I was doing like 450,000, and that was crazy good. That was like, oh my God, 450,000 people, especially in the key demo, 25 to 54, were watching me, and they were like thinking, you know, they were over the moon with this. Candace does 2 million. Tucker does 2-3 million, like every show. They're doing 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times what CNN and Fox and all those other networks are doing. So it's a bigger draw, and it's where people are going more and more, don't you think?
Absolutely. Well, there's the level of trust in the legacy media's historic lows with perfectly understandable reasons. And I think that the fact that this alternative that Candace and Tucker and all the others have pursued, which has proven to be a potentially, you know, good income for people who speak the truth, journalists who speak the truth, mm-hmm. means, you know, those people with those large mortgages, assuming they have them, like Anderson Cooper and so forth, really don't have an excuse anymore. The alternative, you have an alternative. You can go out there and maintain a good living as a truth-telling journalist, without having to toe the line at CNN or Fox or any of these other organizations.
In fact, you know what look what I've done too. There's other places, there's other countries, there's other, you know, it used to be if you were an American, there's only one place you can go work, and that's the BBC. It's like, you know, it's like this relationship between only England in some European countries and the United States. And as a result, We've never learned from the rest of the world. The average American knows nothing about Greece, for example. You do. The average American knows absolutely nothing about Russia. They think it's still a Stalinist communist country, for example. They know absolutely nothing about China. This whole global South community that's developing, you know, the BRICS or whatever the hell you want to call it, it's significant, it's important, and most Americans, you know, they think multipolarity is a new Steven Spielberg movie that's going to come out. They think BRICS is something you use for construction. It's crazy. But that's one of the problems, too, with the Anderson Coopers of the world. They don't know a damn thing.
Yeah, and that's why in our program, we try really to give voice to people from the Global South. We systematically invite people on from the Global South to come and express their point of view. Not because people from, you know, the United States and Europe, people, white people like ourselves, don't have valuable perspectives to offer. Sure, they do. But we also have to hear from people from parts of the world that are unfamiliar to us, and particularly where there's tremendous amounts of suffering being caused by our own governments. They deserve to have an opportunity to say what they are experiencing at the hands of Western imperialism directly to the peoples from the West, and I think it's very important for us in the alternative media to give them a voice.
You do a good job with it. I've been watching you, and by the way, not only do you do a good job because you're expressing that, but you're also very exact in how you report it. I mean, maybe because of your legal training, but you're very specific in how you lay out the argument. This is what they said. This is what they said. This is how it's going to probably go as a result of what this action. So, you know, you're very informative in that way, and I think there's probably not enough of that. There's too many people who are get a little too excited and start making more opinion and not enough fact. And I think it's important for us to lay out those facts. I mean, and this thing that I was talking about earlier, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, it's as much as Gaza is the worst example of it ever. But I think Gaza has highlighted to many Americans that a lot of what their government tells them is bull crap. It's not just Gaza. It's Ukraine. It's Libya. It's Syria. It's all over the place.
You know, Rick, one of the things that I really can't find the words to describe my disgust at this hypocrisy. At the same time as these Western leaders are telling us that we must defend Ukraine and we can't allow aggression to be rewarded and the borders of a sovereign state are sacred and all this crap, they are doing everything possible to enable Israel to violate every norm of international law known to man. And this juxtaposition of, you know, sanctimonious statements about Ukraine and support for a state at the same time that is committing genocide has just completely discredited the West. And when these things are said, and this is the part that just blows my mind, you know, when these things are said by Western politicians and repeated by the corporate media, the press gallery should fall over in uproarious laughter.
Yeah.
You know, should be met with profound levels of skepticism, and they repeat this crap as though it's serious.
I know. Oh my God, you're so right. I almost want to say, when I'm hearing some of these officials in our government from either party say these things, I'm like, okay, so what did we do in Iraq? Oh, and 20 years in Afghanistan. Oh, and we overthrew the guy in Libya. Oh, and we tried to assassinate the guy in Guatemala. Oh, and by the way, we bombed Belgrade for 93 straight days and killed 1,000 innocent people who just happened to be living in an apartment. And yet we're angry that someone may have invaded, or whatever word we want to use for that. I mean, talk about the pot calling the kettle black, right? But you're right. Nobody brings those things up, almost like they never happened.
Yeah, and that litany you just cited so ably is like 10% of the crimes that Western governments have committed in the post-World War II period. Like, you literally just scrape in the surface. So with this body of evidence that they have nothing but contempt for international law and human rights, how can any self-respecting journalist print what they say about the need to defend Ukraine, or, you know, the defense of the Middle East-only democracy, without at least expressing a large dose of skepticism? This just boggles the mind, man. You know, but the people see through it now. This is the hypocrisy, the contradictions have become so glaring, I think nobody's buying it anymore.
How hard is it, as a result of what you just stated, for our country, my country, sorry, the United States, you're Canadian, right? Yeah, or both our countries, because they basically speak with one mouth. How hard is it for them to go in a situation and try and be an arbiter? You know, how can you be the referee in your own fight, I've always wondered.
Yeah, and this is part of the circus that we have been conditioned to accept. There's a profound conflict of interest here. The U.S. government, the Canadian government, every major Western government in Europe is complicit in Israel's genocide, is enabling the genocide. And yet you have the Trump administration, and before that, the Biden administration, pretending that they actually were competent to mediate the dispute between the victims of the genocide and the perpetrator of it.
You can't.
And they're doing the same damn thing in Ukraine, Rick.
Yeah.
You know, Trump is pretending that he's mediating between Zelensky and President Putin. This is laughable.
Yeah, at some point, credibility matters, you know? And I'm wondering, maybe this is where we should kind of finish this thing off, because you really know a lot about this. You're really smart. I've been reading your stuff and looking at you and your podcast, and you talk about this specifically. Do you think eventually, given what we talked about at the beginning of our conversation, that Hamas might knuckle under simply out of necessity?
No, I mean, there was a very interesting statement that came from one of the groups fighting in Gaza called the Popular Resistance Committees. And they said that no organization, and they were referring not only to Hamas, but all the resistance groups, has the authority, moral or otherwise, to negotiate away the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people. What are their inalienable rights? The right to resist oppression, the right of Palestinian refugees to return to their homeland, and the right to self-determination, meaning a sovereign state. Even if Hamas were to capitulate, I don't think at the grassroots level the Palestinian people would accept it. There was a poll done in May of this year by a reputable polling agency which found that 80% of Palestinians living under occupation opposed disarmament. So how the hell could any resistance group say, We're giving up our weapons while we are being subjected to a genocide. I don't think the Palestinian people would give them up. So I personally, I don't believe that the leadership of Hamas will capitulate. But even if they did, I don't think they would be able to implement their decision to capitulate.
How many people you think have died?
In the Gaza Strip, I think the number is in the hundreds of thousands at this stage. The official figure is in the range of 65,000 from the Palestinian Ministry of Health. But these are only the bodies that they have been able to count and identify.
Yeah.
There are dead Palestinians. Horribly, it's horrible to say it, all over Gaza. I'm sure that when finally people are allowed in to see what the horrors that have been inflicted, they'll find mass graves. They'll find many bodies under the rubble. And reputable estimates coming from organizations like The Lancet, the prestigious medical journal, they put the number now in the range of 200,000, 300,000 people. So let us hope that that's not the case. But I think realistically speaking, that's the death toll we're looking at.
Yeah, I've always wondered, because just today I saw that the Israelis hit another building, and you literally are watching the missile hit and the entire building crumbles to the ground. And I'm thinking, nobody ever decrumbles or rebuilds or removes that rubble. It's all there. Every time I see a picture of Gaza, it's nothing but mountains of rubble. So who's to say, or who knows, how many people were in that building at any one time? Am I crazy for thinking that?
Not at all. No, the Israelis have actually systematically destroyed the heavy equipment they require to remove that rubble. Just recently, they destroyed some vehicles that were coming in for that very purpose. It's inevitable that under those massive structures that have been blown up, oftentimes on very short notice or no notice at all, that there are going to be dozens and dozens of civilians. And then you have parts of the Strip, like the area of Khan Yunis, for example, that are largely inaccessible to the medical authorities in Gaza. And who knows how many dead Palestinians lay there. We haven't really begun to grasp the horror of what has been done.
What do you make of Smotrich going and getting in the face of the flotilla folks and saying things to them like they're nothing but a bunch of terrorists and et cetera, et cetera? It just seemed ugly to me.
You know, this is, I think, a demonstration of the principle, which I've often articulated, that power makes people stupid. Because if Smotrich was actually thinking rationally, he would have at least been courteous to the Westerners were sitting before him. You know, just even if he hates them, even if he loathes them, just for purposes of public relations, he should have been courteous. But the fact that he's standing there in this arrogant manner, you know, humanitarians who are completely defenseless and have their hands tied behind their back, who are doing nothing more than trying to deliver baby formula to starving children. I mean, this is something that was bound to only exacerbate anger in the West at the extreme elements in Netanyahu's cabinet. So he's shooting himself in his own foot by behaving in this manner. But then so too is the entire, you know, Netanyahu regime. They are engaging in the most, I think, incompetent forms of propaganda we've ever seen out of the state of Israel.
Yeah, which is surprising, because Israel and its leaders have always been pretty damn shrewd. Whether you liked what they were doing or didn't like what they were doing, I think it's fair to say that they've always been pretty shrewd, pretty smart, you know, good marketers, good negotiators, good at making sure that their point of view was out there. But lately, it's almost like they're shooting themselves in the foot. And this guy, Smotrich, just a guy's an animal.
And I can't believe he hasn't been indicted by the ICC. It just blows my mind.
Which reminds me. Go ahead. Finish.
I would just say, he could travel freely to the United States, even though even under Israeli law a few years ago, he was considered to be a terrorist.
You know, that reminds me what you just said about being indicted. I've always kind of thought that there's a similarity between Mr. Zelensky and Mr. Netanyahu, in that both feel like they're better off with a war than without a war. In other words, I think Mr. Zelensky knows if this war ends, his gig is up. I don't know what the hell he's going to do, or he may even face worse consequences when they find things out about what he's done, especially with those billions of dollars. And Mr. Netanyahu will very likely face imprisonment based just on the case that I've seen against him in terms of corruption prior to becoming prime minister. So it's kind of like two peas in a pod here, no?
Yeah, look, from my perspective, if I was a Ukrainian, I would say that Zelensky has committed treason. And he should be tried in a court of law for betraying his country. That's exactly what he's doing. All of this is about preserving his own power and his own life, frankly. Because once he leaves office, I think there's going to be a brutal accounting of what his regime has done.
Yeah, I agree.
I think he's keenly aware of that.
And Netanyahu?
Netanyahu is dooming his own country to destruction. I think where we're headed, most likely, I would love to be wrong about this, is that he's going to revive the criminal war of aggression on Iran. And the Israelis are about to find out just what the full force of Iran's missile capabilities are. And, the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament just came out. I don't know whether this is true or not, but he said that the Russian government was providing MiG-29s and S-400 air defense systems. And he was also getting air defense systems from China.
Yeah.
So Netanyahu is just going to continue expanding this war, and eventually I think it's going to destroy Israel.
Yeah, I kind of think you're right in that prior to the development of the Global South, prior to the developments of the things that I saw for myself when I was in China during the Shanghai Cooperative Summit, this union, as it were, that's taken place, it was easier for countries like UK, United States, Canada, to kind of bully any country, even countries in the Middle East, Iraq, obviously, as we saw, Afghanistan, which is obviously a country that's not as big in terms of people. But today, it might be a little harder to do that kind of thing. It would be harder to pull off on Iraq, for example, today because of India, China, Russia, Gulf states, South Africa, Brazil, all these countries that kind of have come together with a wink and a nod and are saying to the other, I got your back. You know, I would think hard and long before I would attack one of these countries right now, as opposed to 10 years ago.
Yeah, and an excellent example of this, Rick, is that, you know, they've brought back the snapback sanctions, those hypocritical vassals in Europe, after Trump blew up the JCPOA with Iran. And the governments of China and Iran have said clearly, I'm sorry, China and Russia have said unequivocally that this is illegitimate. Because it wasn't Iran that violated the JCPOA. The United States blew it up, and then the Europeans did nothing. So I think they've signaled very clearly, as you've suggested, they're going to support, in some way, some form, the Islamic Republic of Iran. I think they're going to continue to do business with Iran. China will continue to buy oil from Iran. And this entire snapback sanction scheme is ultimately going to fail to affect regime change in the country.
Yeah, and not for nothing, but let me just say publicly that as an American, I have never felt threatened by Iran, ever. Words are nothing. This whole thing about death to America stuff, that's like, it's a chant. And there's a huge difference between a chant and actions. Or someone constantly taking money from my kid's mouth that I could use to feed them and to take care of them so that we can send it to some other country. Yeah, the countries we loathe are not really the ones I think we should loathe. I'll leave you with the closing thought on that.
The greatest enemy confronting us today are our own governments, the primary objective of every citizen of conscience living in the West is to throw the bums out.
Yeah, throw the bums out. I love that. There's an old term from old guys.
Exactly.
Well said. That's like my kids laughing at me when I say, you're going to get your comeuppance. Dimitri, you're a delight to talk to, my friend. Thank you so much. I've really very much enjoyed this. Hope to talk to you again soon. Let's keep in touch.
Be my pleasure. Take care, Rick.
That's it for us. Thanks so much for being with us. Remember to check out my podcast. It's on YouTube, where we play things like this and others, by the way. By the way, it's called Journalistically Speaking. I'm also on X. Lots of conversations there. They're good. Really interesting stuff. That's at Rick Sanchez TV if you want to look me up and have a conversation with me. We're on there every single day. Thanks for being with us. Most importantly, thanks for letting us into your home.